Hey, this is Gerald Casale from Devo, and you're listening to Mystery Tour Radio.
So, dear Gerald, how is the devolution process going in your opinion? Isn't it growing at a faster rate in comparison with the 70s, or is it just an impression?
Yes, I think it has, the rate has exploded exponentially. And has surpassed our worst fears mm-hmm. and our most horrible visions that we had, but did not really want to be right. We didn't really want to predict this.
Do you think technology has something to do with this? I mean, also the explosion of social networks and so on.
Yes, because given human nature, which is Jekyll and Hyde, you know, there's a dark side to human nature. Yeah. And so technology gave people the tools to do whatever they were doing at a much, like, higher, more intense rate. So all the negative things that people do were suddenly given a lot more energy and a lot more voice in the marketplace. And you watch the disinformation and the filth and the lies and the ridiculous, you know, conspiracies, you know, just permeating. And so, you know, if people aren't strong, if they can't think logically, if they can't separate truth from lies, then they are the most vulnerable. They go down. It's like a disease. So their minds are being polluted and destroyed. And this is exactly what you're seeing. Everybody's stupid. Everybody's nuts. Everybody's mean. And those people are winning. There are very good people, but there aren't enough good people.
So we might need some help. So I'm asking you, do you have any news from good old Jihad Jerry?
Jihad Jerry. Yes, Jihad Jerry is here again to rear his prophetically ugly head and do a major colon cleansing of this culture. My debut record, Jihad Jerry and the Evildoers, put out in 2005, mm-hmm. the title Mine Is Not a Holy War, is being re-released Record Store Day, June 2021, with bonus tracks and a brand new single called I'm Gonna Pay You Back.
Oh, that's amazing. So we can expect definitely a comeback. Will you do some live performances as well?
Hopefully this time I will. I tried to last time, couldn't put it together with people. You know, but now I think the time is more right than ever.
Yeah. How is the 50 by 50 Pinot wine adventure going?
Well, you know, I'm a small producer. I produce Pinot Noir. I produce a rosé of Pinot Noir. Mm-hmm. And I'm making a white wine now. And everything was starting to build. The brand was working out, and I was starting to be able to get my wines to more people and more restaurants, more stores. And then COVID-19 came. And all my accounts, all the restaurants and bars were forced to close. So they quit buying wine. They were trying to get rid of what they had. And these times are so terrible that it's just hard. It's hard. People are giving wine away. You know what I mean? There's an oversupply because of what's happened.
Devo are always very active on the social networks to keep in touch with the fans. Despite or in spite of this weird sanitary emergency era, are you working on new music as well?
Well, I certainly am, and that's how the new Jihad Jerry song came about.
Yeah.
You know, I've never lost the spirit. I was working with Josh Fries, you know, the famous drummer Josh Fries, who mm-hmm. drummed with Devo, and he drummed with Nine Inch Nails forever, and he drummed with Sting. He's a very creative guy. I worked with him, and a guy that was the guitar player from Oingo Boingo,
yeah,
that works with Danny Elfman on soundtracks. His name is Steve Bartek. Steve Bartek and Josh and I got together in the studio and you know, were experimenting and writing, and a new Jihad Jerry song came out of it.
What about the Devo area?
Well, you know, I don't know what to say there. You would have to ask Mr. Mark Mothersbaugh.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't seem to be interested in collaborating on new Devo material.
Okay. Here comes the difficult question. You know, the best and the worst of being a Devo back in the 80s.
Well, I mean, you know, the best was the fact that suddenly what we'd been doing, which was so different and original, got accepted by mainstream culture just, you know, overnight. So we went from being, you know, somebody that people hated and laughed at to celebrated and, you know, put on television and put on every big festival and tour. And it was, you know, it exploded. I mean, once David Bowie and Brian Eno embraced us, the world turned around for Devo. But then, of course, the horrible part about that is then the record company and the business expects you to just stay like you are and don't, as an artist, don't develop, don't change, don't experiment, but just do what they want. And because they think that they understand you now. It was better when they didn't understand us. So it's, you know, it's a double-edged sword. Success is a very double-edged sword.
They don't want you to evolve.
No. Yeah, they didn't want Devo to evolve.
That's the opposite. Can you share with us a memory of your brother, Bob?
You know, each year passes since his death, I miss him more and more, and it's more and more painful because, you know, we were really two sets of brothers, the Mothersbaughs and the Casalis, and we collaborated.
Okay.
And my brother and I worked together, like sometimes just alone together. We had a very good rapport, and he could do what I couldn't do, which was like tedious studio production and, you know, working with electronics and effects. And I would have ideas, but he could make them real.
Yeah.
So we had this great rapport and communication, and I miss that so much. And my memories of you know, us in the early days and Bob's great sense of humor was that we were going to New York to play in these little clubs like Max's Kansas City and CBGB's, and we would all be crammed into this, you know, old van that we would drive from Ohio to New York, and we'd have to stop along the way on the highway to try to find these diners, you know, to get something cheap to eat. And we were all sitting in a diner and a truck stop, and all they had was horrible stuff. And I ordered some soup, and the soup came. And I take a spoonful of the soup, and we're all crammed into this booth, all five of us, like shoulder to shoulder. And I taste it, and I go, my God, this soup tastes like shit. And my brother looks up and goes, maybe it's your mouth.
Okay.
And he just said it very matter-of-factly and then went back down to eating his sandwich.
Yeah.
And that was Bob. That's the kind of guy he was. He was a very no-bullshit guy, a very giving, fair, you know, very even-tempered guy. He was the last guy ever to get angry.
What kind of music do you like to listen to when free from the duties of your music?
You know, it's tough. You know, it's really tough. I'm not hearing any music today that's very good. You know, my wife will play me things that are really great. But it's bands nobody's ever heard of, or, you know, and there's so much good music out there that does not get embraced commercially, that is not on the radio and people don't know about and aren't buying a lot of. But I would have to even ask her again who these people are, because I've never heard of them. But what I like about it is there's a movement going on where these people in their 20s are taking all these cool sounds from the 80s from like, you know, Depeche Mode, Devo, Kraftwerk, all these influences, but then they're recombining them and mutating them with also like lo-fi effects and distortion. It's just below the radar. It's like, this is not commercial music that everybody's buying. But I wish it would explode. I wish it would go mainstream.
Yeah.
Because this is the cool stuff. The stuff that's on, the stuff that's big sellers, I it's awful, because it just sounds all the same, and it just sounds like a computer made it. And all the vocals and everything are all the same, like tired, stale, dumb shit. So yeah, I'm listening to that, and then, you know, I go back and listen to old David Bowie. I mean,
yeah,
that's what I like to do. He's my hero.
Are you working on something in the video directing area?
You know, I would love to, but it's so strange. I mean, of course, there's no money for music videos, except if, you know, if you're Taylor Swift, yes, you can make a $500,000 video. Or, you know, if you're, you know, Katie, what's her name? You know, the pop singer, or Dua Lipa, or any of these people. But they go to these same, like, six directors, right? It's like there's only, like, a few directors that even get to work, and they're all very young, and they all have tattoos and piercings. You know, people like me, you know, are overlooked. You know, it's like ageism. They don't respect me.
Do you have any special memory related to Italy, either with Devo or your personal experience?
Well, you know, I still remember everything about Italy, and I love Italy, and I've been trying to get enough money to buy a place there.
Oh.
It all started with Devo's first tour of Italy, which was unforgettable. And I just remember so many things. You know, I've been back to Italy since 1980. I've been back to Italy probably a dozen times.
Okay.
You know, I come to Italy whenever I can. The last time I was in Italy was the day that Donald Trump won the election. And my wife and I flew out of Los Angeles and went to Italy and spent time in Sicily, because I'd never been in Sicily. I'd been everywhere in northern and central Italy, all the obvious places like, you know, Portofino, Milan, Venice, Florence, Rome, you know, you name it. But Sicily was a real revelation. We spent like a week in Ortigia, off the coast of Siracusa. And that was just I love Italy. I could just stay there. I could easily never come back to America. When we first played, I still remember we were taken by RAI, right?
Uh-huh.
RAI TV. We were taken to the piazza there in the Vatican, the
okay.
big circle where the Pope comes out and he blesses everybody. And we were all in our outfits and our red hats. And RAI filmed us getting blessed by the Pope. And that night we played our concert on the steps out in front of the Castello San Angelo.
Yeah.
And Italy was, the soccer team was involved in the finals, and they had a big screen up, and we had to wait until the game was over. Italy won, and it was just the crowd was so going nuts because Italy won that it was just like the concert was just a post-game party, and it was so surreal to us. It was so incredible. And we were outside in the summer with the castle, with the outside of the castle lit up with lights behind us, and it was amazing.
A final message and greeting to the Italian fans?
Yes. Well, you know, on behalf of Devo, I reach out to all of you in Italy who appreciated Devo and want to tell you that we are suffering here as you suffered there, and I hope it will be over soon, and we will return to pre-COVIDian times together,
yeah.
And we will see you again in person.